Thank you, Andrew, for the invitation to speak today at this ABNF Retail Financial Services Forum. I'm going to speak today about the conclusions of the bank's strategic review of innovation in the payment system that was announced on June the 7th. The Payment System Board initiated the review in May 2010, and the bank has been consulting over an extended period with probably many people in this room as the board and the bank worked towards the conclusions of the review. The objective of the review has been to identify areas where innovation in the Australian payment system could be promoted through more effective cooperation between stakeholders and regulators. The focus has been on the medium term, and the banks has looked closely at international trends in this area. Of course, the decision to conduct the review did not necessarily imply that there is little innovation in payments in Australia. Just looking outside at all the stands there, I think we can see that there is a lot of innovation. And there is lots of evidence of customer-facing innovation in recent years. But the bank's focus in the review has been more on areas of system-wide or cooperative innovation, where the decisions are not just in the hands of a single player. And here there's evidence that innovations of this nature have proved difficult to achieve. This reflects a range of coordination problems. Such problems could result, for example, from industry players having different incentives because they're at different stages of their investment cycle. I should also note that concerns about obstacles to innovation are not just an Australian phenomenon. There's a recent paper by Bruce Summers, who's a former senior official in the US Fed system in this area, and he talks of very similar issues in the United States. And a review similar to ours was recently conducted and completed in Canada. The conclusions of the review envisage an ongoing role for the bank in relation to innovation. In particular, there are a number of processes that will flow from the review that will require dialogue with the industry over the coming months. In addition, the board has proposed that there'll be regular and ongoing engagement between it and the industry, both on strategic objectives and other issues on an ongoing basis. The conclusions of the review represent a change in direction for the Payment System Board. The board was established in 1998, with the mandate of promoting efficiency and competition in the payment system and the overall stability of the financial system. While the board has sought to influence industry developments in a number of areas over the years, it hasn't so far played any formal role in respect of innovation. This has reflected the assumption, which I think is the natural one, that innovation is normally best driven by market forces. So the decision to undertake a more active role reflects the board's view that market forces might not be sufficient to produce some types of innovation that are in the public interest. So in the remainder of my talk today, I'm going to discuss some of the gaps in the payment system that were identified in the review, the strategic objectives that the board has announced, and the implications of the review for industry governance. I'll start with the issue of gaps in the payment system. In the preparatory work for the review, the bank spelled out a number of attributes that are valued by end users of the payment system. These include factors like timeliness, accessibility, ease of use, ease of integration with other processes, and obviously safety and reliability. And thinking about these attributes has helped to identify some gaps that will need to be addressed if the payment system is to continue to meet the needs of end users over the medium term. The first of these gaps concerns real-time retail payments. That is the ability for customers to make retail payments with the recipient being able to see and access those funds in near to real time. For example, if some of us were to have lunch today and decide to split the bill, could we make electronic payments between us with the recipients receiving immediate access to those funds? Now, some financial institutions have recently been promoting various elements of retail payments, including the capacity to make real-time mobile payments to customers of the same bank. But there's currently no capacity for this across financial institutions. Another example of this gap has been revealed by the recent natural disasters. in the problems that some government agencies had in attempting to make payments to households that would be available immediately. There are a number of elements at work here. The major one is the fact that the payment instructions in the direct entry or DE system are processed in batches, meaning that there will be a delay in the payment no matter how quickly the receiving bank processes it. In addition, there may be delays that reflect the way that the funds are settled between financial institutions and the way that recipient institutions make the funds available to their customers. A second gap concerns the ability to make payments outside of the traditional business hours, including on weekends and public holidays. Now, the front end of some payment systems may appear to be operating on a 24/7 basis. For example, consumers can initiate Pay Anyone or BPay payments at any hour of the day via online or phone banking. However, the back end of the systems often don't operate on a 24/7 basis. As a result, a payment initiated after a bank's cut-off time on a Friday evening might not be received by a customer until Tuesday or even Wednesday in the case of a public holiday. The situation concerning these two gaps is out of step with the broader developments in our economy and a society where people expect more and more services to be available with greater immediacy 7 days a week. And these trends are likely to continue, and the retail payment system should be adjusting accordingly. As this occurs, of course, the availability of the Reserve Bank's real-time gross settlement system, RITS, will need to be enhanced to extend interbank settlement capability. And the bank is committed to doing this as needed. The third gap identified in the review is in the capacity to carry remittance information with payments. This issue is most apparent in the case of the direct entry system, which is the principal business payment system. Here, messages can currently carry a maximum of 18 characters of additional remittance information, which is obviously insufficient for many business purposes. For example, a business may wish to incorporate detailed information about an invoice, or a customer business might wish to provide details about which items on the invoice are being paid. Not surprisingly, there are solutions here. The ISO 20022 message standard provides flexibility to incorporate a significant quantity of data and is being adopted in many countries around the world. And APCA, the Australian Payments Clearing Association, has recently set out a voluntary schema for using this standard domestically. A second option here is to handle the remittance data separately, but provide a short reference to these data in the message itself. A fourth gap identified in the review has to do with the addressing of payments. Currently, the payee's BSB number and account number, so that's up to 15 digits, must be provided when an electronic payment is made into a bank account. The bank believes that an easier means of addressing payments could improve the efficiency of the payment system. One approach to simplifying addressing would be to use an identifier, for instance, a phone number, that can be associated in a database, probably a central database, with a person's full account details. The Payment System Board considers that the payments industry should be aspiring to address these four gaps over the coming years. It's therefore proposed that solutions to these gaps should be among the initial set of strategic objectives for the payments industry, and I'll return to this shortly. Another focus of the innovation review was the architecture of the payment system. In thinking about architectural solutions that are necessary to address the gaps that I mentioned earlier, the review focused on two issues, the DE system and real-time payments. In the case of the direct entry system, the review proposes some possible enhancements where the board considers that significant benefits for the payment system could be delivered at a relatively modest cost. Furthermore, the bank noted that it doesn't see the establishment of a system for real-time payments as eliminating the need for DE payments to be settled in a more timely fashion. In the case of real-time payments, the board considers that new architecture will be required. Traditionally, the architecture of most Australian payment systems, including DE, ATMs, FPOS, has been bilateral in nature. That is, these systems have relied on bilateral lines between pairs of participants, and bilateral agreements about various elements of security, transmission, processing, and the pricing of payments between the parties. By contrast, many systems around the world, and some operating in Australia, operate via a central hub, with all messages passing via the hub to the recipient. This is obviously more efficient, as a new entrant needs only to connect to the hub rather than establishing separate connections to each participant. The board believes there should be a general presumption in favour of more centralised systems when the opportunity arises, particularly in the establishment of new systems. Accordingly, as we seek to achieve real-time payments, the board believes that the critical element of real-time messaging should logically be provided via a payments messaging hub, which could accommodate a large number of participants in an efficient manner. And I'm going to refer to this as the payments hub. Such a hub would also be able to provide additional processing services, including holding a database of account identifiers and possibly allowing for remittance data. Now, the bank believes that such a system could be linked to a system providing real-time settlement of retail transactions. The settlement system, or the settlement hub, would be established as a separate module of the bank's RITS system, and it would receive settlement instructions from the payment hub, which would process individual payment instructions from financial institutions. This type of system could settle using liquidity that was reserved for retail settlements, and there could be periodic updating of ESA balances and the funds available for retail settlements. And this system would be available for the same hours of operation as the payments hub. Now, there are potentially a number of ways that the payments hub or hubs could be delivered. The board's presumption, however, is that a single hub would be most efficient. The objective would be to provide open access at reasonable cost to the hub's core functions. And participants could then compete over the services that they could offer to end users through a variety of delivery channels. The hub could potentially support different payment systems, all achieving real-time settlement. A hub could be run on either a commercial basis or as a utility. The board's preliminary view here is that a hub of this type would be best operated as a utility, owned either by the industry or the Reserve Bank. This would provide the greatest opportunity for competition between financial institutions and other payment providers over the services that they could offer to end users. And recent history suggests this is where we could expect significant innovation. The board recognises, of course, that the cost of establishing a payments hub and an accompanying settlement facility may be significant. In addition, expenditure by individual financial institutions on their own systems would be required to implement real-time payments. So this needs to be considered in establishing a process and a timetable for achieving real-time payments. So to summarise on the issue of architecture, the Payment System Board believes that the industry should be aiming to provide a system of real-time retail payments within the next several years. Further, the board's view is that the system would be best provided by the establishment of real-time payments and settlement hubs. The settlement hub would need to be provided by the Reserve Bank, but the board has an open mind about how a payments hub would be provided. Accordingly, it's seeking views from industry on how real-time retail payments can best be delivered. The review contains an attachment which sets out both a possible model for a real-time payments system, real-time retail payment system provided via a hub, and some indicative timelines. The board is seeking industry views by the end of August and would like to be in a position to have a clear path forward later in 2012. The reason for this relatively short window is that the board does not wish to see Australia lag significantly behind in the provision of real-time retail payments. Any discussion of innovation and the current gaps in the system inevitably turns also to the issue of the governance of the payment system. The review contains three related initiatives to improve payments system industry governance. And these proposals would represent a change in the board's relationship with the industry. First, the board is proposing setting some high-level strategic objectives for the industry. Here the board is seeking to overcome some of the coordination problems we've seen. Many submissions to the review suggested that the board set some sort of roadmap for the industry in order to create shared goals and to help individual players prioritise their activities and plan their allocation of resources over the medium term. Now, the board saw some merit in this approach, but the implementation needs to take account of the nature of the payment system board. The board's is a policy body. It's not a technical body. Its mandate involves judgments about the public interest, including matters of safety, efficiency, and competition in the payment system. The board therefore believes that its role should normally be to set high-level objectives for the payment system, and it should be the industry's role to determine how those objectives can be met in the most efficient way. Accordingly, the board is not proposing a detailed roadmap, but it's indicating some final destinations, which could potentially be reached by a number of alternative paths determined by the industry. So the initial objectives for the payment system that have been set by the board reflect the gaps identified during the review. In summary, the payment system should be able to provide same-day settlement of all direct entry payments by the end of 2013. Second, the ability to make real-time retail payments by the end of 2016. Third, the ability to make and receive low-value payments, so that's direct entry, real-time payments, and crediting of card payment receipts, outside of normal banking hours by the end of 2016. Fourth, there should be the ability to send more complete remittance information with payments by the end of 2016. And fifth, the ability to address payments in a relatively simple way. And we've said here that this should be by the end of 2017 if this was via a new real-time system, although this doesn't rule out earlier availability via other solutions. These objectives, I should note, are all in the innovation review that we released 2 weeks ago. The board is seeking feedback on these strategic objectives in the coming months and is prepared to consider adjusting these dates as a result of feedback. It's, of course, possible that these capabilities could be delivered in less time, and the board encourages the industry to try to do so. Looking ahead, the board anticipates ongoing dialogue and consultation between the bank, the industry, and other interested parties, and a formal process of setting strategic objectives every 3 years. The release of proposed strategic objectives by the board could be expected to initiate industry discussions on the approach to meeting these objectives. The board would then wish to hear a well-articulated approach to meeting the objectives, along with key milestones. And during implementation, the board would wish to receive updates on progress towards these milestones. At each stage, the board might wish to provide feedback to the industry on whether it thought the response was appropriate. The second proposal regarding governance is that there is the need for enhanced industry self-governance. Currently, the main body for industry coordination is APCA. APCA's genesis, as you know, is in governing the 5 cooperative clearing and settlement arrangements. So there's currently cash, paper, consumer electronic, bulk electronic, and high-value payments. However, it's becoming increasingly clear that needs for a coordination are broader than this. In recent years, APCA has sought greater industry-wide coordination, for instance, through the Australian Payments Forum. And APCA has also recently made public its proposals for some new government arrangements that would broaden its membership. The board welcomes these efforts and supports constituting an industry-wide coordination body building on APCA's arrangements. The need to deal with a range of different issues suggests the body would have to operate through a number of subcommittees, similar to the existing APCA structure, but with a peak committee that has representation at a sufficiently senior level to take ownership of strategic issues and to engage directly on policy issues with the Payment System Board. These arrangements would also need to take genuine account of end users' views. Accordingly, the board has proposed that the bank work with the industry on enhanced industry coordination arrangements. It's not seeking to dictate specific details of decision-making arrangements. However, it has suggested some criteria would be important. The industry body should have a clearly stated obligation to consider both the interests of the industry and the public interest. There should be a strong role for independent directors. The body should be representative of those that have a genuine stake in outcomes and not dominated by any class of participants. End users' views, that is the views of households, businesses and potentially government, should be represented either explicitly or through independent directors. The coordination body should be small enough to be effective, and representatives at the peak level should be sufficiently senior to promote a strategic approach. The third proposal on governance concerns the relationship between the Payment System Board and the industry. In particular, should a suitable industry body be constituted, the board is proposing to have regular engagement with that body, both on setting and implementing strategic objectives and on the broader activity of the industry body. So let me conclude by summarising the four major components of the board's proposed approach following the strategic review. First, as I've said, the board is establishing a process of setting high-level strategic objectives, which it believes the payment system should be able to meet by a specified time. Second, the initial set of strategic objectives will reflect the gaps identified during the strategic review. The board is seeking initial feedback on these strategic objectives in the coming months. Third, while the board intends to let the industry determine the approach to meeting the strategic objectives, it sees merit in the establishment of hub-based architecture for providing real-time payments, including a real-time settlement hub provided by the Reserve Bank. The bank is seeking industry feedback by end August on its preferred approach to real-time payments and the model for delivery. Finally, the board is looking to the constitution of an enhanced industry body and will engage more directly with this body. So as I've indicated, there are a number of areas in the conclusions of the strategic review where the bank will be engaging with stakeholders in coming months. We'll be happy to receive written submissions here and to meet with interested parties in person. So I look forward to these discussions and also any questions you may have today.
Thanks. It's Andrew Lyons from Royal Bank of Scotland. I just had a question. Just aside from any investment required for the central payments hub itself, I'm just interested just how capable do you think the retail banks' systems actually are to actually deliver real-time payments capability at the moment, and how much investment do you think the retail banks will be required themselves to actually get to a position where they'll be able to deliver in line with the central payments hub?
We realise that this is a major task for the banking system, and I suspect there are some banks that would have significant work to do on their systems to move towards real-time retail payments. What we've done here is we've set a target that gives quite a lot of time. So we think the target is an ambitious one, but it's fully achievable. And as we go through our discussions with the industry, we'll be able to contemplate changes if we think there is a persuasive case to do so. So I think it's something we'll have to discuss with the industry, but we have had initial discussions on this issue, and we've set a timetable here that we think is achievable.
Question here. Pradeep Khanna from Global Mindset. How does Australia compare with other OECD countries in real-time payment systems?
There's a recent interesting report done by the CPSS, which is an international working group here that's got some further details on it. What we can say is that we are behind some countries. For example, the United Kingdom has got faster payments, which is essentially delivering retail payments. There are some other countries that have also achieved it. I think the important thing is that if we don't set ambitious targets now, we will fall behind most other OECD countries. And so that the target here is that we have real-time retail payments by 2016. And I think I'm reminded of the old saying that if we fail to plan, then we're planning to fail. And so that's the reason why the Payment System Board has decided to take a more active role in encouraging innovation, especially in an area where it has proven difficult to get system-wide innovations in our payment system.
Tony, that seems to be a key point that I've taken out of your presentation and some of the comments. And the initial response from APCA was that time frame seems very difficult to meet. Can we already they came out with, can we see an extension? Seemed a bit early to be making that statement to me. But innovation is driven by competition. Is that the key message here, is that we want to see a genuinely far more innovative approach which will provide a competitive advantage for not only our financial institutions but also those that are outside the financial institutions? To me, it's obvious that, you know, the Googles of the world and those globally are going to drive this innovation if our financial institutions don't.
I think there's right. I think that's right. You occasionally hear things saying that there's no demand for real-time retail payments, but I don't think that's right. That there is growing demand for it, and it's clear that that demand is only going to get stronger. And I think we have to be working towards that now. You talked about innovation. I think we'll see lots of customer facing innovation, but what we need is to have more of this of the system wide innovation, more innovation in the system wide, the architecture, the shared architecture, so that you can build on proprietary innovation, and the bank the focus of the innovation review is on this shared system wide architecture. And without it, we'll be very limited in the innovation that can be delivered to customers, or it'll come out from outside the existing system, which is the what you identified, Andrew.
Caroline Ferris from the Commonwealth Bank. Given that it seems to be difficult to get financial institutions to collaborate because of different investment cycles, incentives to invest, is there any possibility of a framework by a board, by the Payment Systems Board, to create either financial carrots or sticks to encourage or to even help form business cases inside banks to innovate in some of these, to cover some of these gaps?
The board does have a number of powers under the Payment System Regulation Act, and I think it'd be it would be an indication of industry failure if they needed to be invoked. But the board is able to make standards for participants in payment systems. The bank also has the ability to build architecture itself. But I think there will be quite a lot of interest in building a payments hub from the industry, and the bank has said that. We'd be willing to provide a settlements hub. We'll be able to provide a settlements hub to accompany that payments hub. So I think there's every reason to think that the architecture can be done here. So then the only question is, are the banks willing to get their systems together to link with that real-time retail payments hubs? And I would think it's very much in the interest of the banks to do so.
Okay, that's time for one last question, and then we're going to let Dr. Tony Richards go. Adam Sadiq.
Thanks, Andrew. Tony, Adam Sadiq from Dun & Bradstreet. Thanks for your presentation. I was just wondering whether the bank's done any modelling at this stage in terms of what the macro growth uplift or liquidity improvement could be of going down this sort of policy pathway, and if not, are you aware of what the impact's been in overseas economies?
There has been some modelling in other countries. I don't have any precise numbers for Australia, but I think when you talk to industry participants, when you talk to end users, there is a genuine demand for many of the services that we've suggested here in the gap. So. I'm quite confident that we've identified some important gaps here. Now, there may be some additional ones, and we'll certainly be interested in hearing from industry in relation to those.